Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. The UC Davis graduation ceremony last month was cut short because of a heat wave. Some attendees at the event needed emergency medical help and were taken to the hospital because of the extreme temperatures that day. Lots of people are terrified by extreme weather events like lightning, floods, hurricanes, and tornadoes, but did you know that heat waves are the most lethal type of weather phenomenon in the United States? This episode of Time Out Radio is about heat waves, what they are, why they happen, and what to do if you are in an area where one occurs. A heat wave is when there is abnormally hot weather relative to the usual weather and normal temperatures for the season in an area. Generally, a heat wave is a period of at least two or more days of excessively hot weather. Heat waves can happen over large geographic areas, exposing lots of people to hazardous temperatures. Because of the extreme heat, people who are exposed can have heat-related illnesses like dehydration, cramps, heat exhaustion, and heat strokes, which could even lead to death. Older people and young children are at greater risk from extreme heat. This level of heat can also affect transportation, electricity, water, agriculture, and livestock. High heat can break down and buckle sidewalks and railway tracks. It could be dangerous to operate airplanes. Because people use more refrigeration and air conditioning during heat waves, transmission capacity across electric lines comes down. This puts a strain on our electrical grid and can cause power outages. Water resources are also strained. Power plants use more water for cooling. Plants, animals, and people use up more water. Crops could be damaged, which affects food production and food supply, and is costly to farmers and consumers. Heat waves happen when there are a series of unfortunate events. High-pressure areas in the upper layers of our atmosphere stay there over a period of time. Air that is under high pressure sinks towards the surface, warming and drying the area. It also prevents clouds from forming and increases the amount of radiation from the sun that reaches the surface. The low pressure on the surface causes winds to bring in warm air, which makes things even hotter. If the soil is dry because of drought, the cooling effect of evaporation comes down, and this increases the temperature even more. Climate models tell us that in the future, heat waves could get more frequent and serious. This could be because of increased greenhouse gas emissions from human activity and global warming, which strains our ecosystems. How do you keep yourself safe during a heat wave? Rest. Stay indoors as much as you can. Avoid high energy and outdoor activities, especially in the middle of the day. If you are outside, find shade and wear a hat to protect your face. If you don't have air conditioning, go somewhere that has it, such as a community cooling center, a library, or a shopping mall. Don't leave people or pets in a closed car. Wear loose, lightweight, light-colored clothing. Take cool showers. Drink lots of non-caffeinated fluids to stay hydrated. Remember, if it gets hotter, drink some water. Up next is Heat Waves by Glass Animals.
Been faking me out, can't wait. wish that I could give you that bad look that's perfectly unsaid. Sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June, he always been faking me out. He always been faking me out. Sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June, he always been faking me out. Can't make you happier now. Sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June, he always been faking me out. Can't make you happier now.
You're listening to Tamart Radio on 95.7 KDRT. Our guest on today's episode is Dr. Richard Grotejohn, who is a professor of climate dynamics at UC Davis. He has a bachelor's in atmospheric science from the University of Washington and his master's and PhD from Florida State University. So, Dr. Grotejohn, welcome to the show. First off, you're an expert in extreme weather and climate events. So, tell us why heat waves happen.
Well, there are several causes of heat waves. Often a heat wave occurs when a hot air mass moves into a region where it is not normally found. Various factors can amplify the heat wave, such as the soil being dry. And in that case, there's little water to evaporate, so more of the sunlight goes into heating the air. Here in Northern California, many areas are cooled by sea breezes. That includes much of the Central Valley. So a heat wave here needs atmospheric pressure fields to block a cooling sea breeze.
Does climate change contribute to heat wave events?
I think that it does. Climate change can contribute to heat waves by an increase in the average temperatures over the land. In our research, we've shown that heat wave pressure and wind patterns are not likely to become more common in future summers. What does happen is the general temperatures of the land areas become elevated. So the amount of time that that sort of typical variation spends above some temperature threshold is something that will increase and due to global sort of general warming. Climate change can also have indirect impacts, such as drying out the soil.
And how does extreme heat affect just our environment in general?
Well, first note that the extreme heat is relative. A temperature of 100 degrees Fahrenheit in Seattle would be considered an extreme event and be on the news and very unusual. Now, the same 100 degree Fahrenheit temperature in summer in Death Valley would not be at all unusual. And so it just depends on where you are as what's extreme. So in terms of the environment, native plants and animals, as well as managed crops, are adapted to normal conditions. So extreme heat can stress plants and animals too. Extreme heat can accelerate evaporation. And then, as I've mentioned, if you have drier soil conditions, more of the sunlight heating will go into heating the air instead of evaporating water.
Yeah, and over the last decade, there have been many times when extreme ocean temperatures have occurred, especially off the coast of California here. So let's talk a little bit about marine heat waves specifically. Tell us a little bit about what they are, how they affect sea life, and how they form off the coast of California.
Okay, when I hear marine heat waves, I think of unusually high ocean surface temperatures. That can occur several ways. The most common impact on sea life that I hear about is how tropical reefs can be impacted. So-called coral bleaching, as the coral is stressed by high temperatures. I generally don't think of marine heat waves affecting California's coast because much of our coastal waters are kept cool by upwelling, especially during summer. That said, there have been cases of unusually warm water off California during some so-called El Nino events. El Nino events are an abnormal pattern of temperature in the tropical Pacific Ocean. About a half dozen years ago, an El Nino was linked to warm water off the North American West Coast. That water was up to 5 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than usual. And the warm water appeared to impact marine life in various ways, such as allowing species that were normally found in warmer water to occur where they aren't normally found. It created a huge algal bloom off of California. There were reports of unusual amounts of seabird die-offs and impacts on marine mammals as well.
Yeah, and beyond being a professor at UC Davis, you own a 10-acre organic farm close to Davis where your main crop is pistachios. So as part of your research, you also analyze climate models. So what's going to happen to our food system if this trend of heat waves were to continue?
The short summary is how plants are affected varies widely for different crops, and the climate change will have multiple effects both during summer and other seasons. Specifically for heat waves, what happens depends on the crop and the management practices that are possible. Some crops become dormant due to high heat. If the plant does not succumb to the high heat, its physiology may be impacted. It may be sped up or slowed down. Sometimes high heat can be mitigated by additional irrigation, but the water may not be available or it may be too expensive to use for that purpose. Now, California leads the nation in the production of many food crops. Some of those crops may no longer be workable in the state, or at least where they are grown now. Dairy, corn, cotton, and wheat yields are all fairly sensitive to further increases in the temperatures that we have now. And so their yields will decline. However, some other crops like alfalfa, rice, and tomatoes are less sensitive to the likely heat change that we'll have in the near future. That said, the mixture of crops in the state will likely change.
And beyond agriculture and our food system, how do heat waves affect the other parts of the economy?
Well, before I talk about that, I'd like to mention that there's probably the biggest impact societally is mortality. So of all the extreme weather event types that you can think of, tornadoes, hurricanes, heat waves cause the most number of fatalities on average every year. As for other aspects of the economy, heat waves can impact infrastructure. And here I'm thinking about stresses to the power grid, but also things like roads buckling in the heat. To give you an example, in July of 2006, we had what may have been one of our worst heat waves in recorded history. And during that one, PG&E lost over 1,000 of their transformers as they overheated during that event.
And on your farm where you and your family live, you have a solar photovoltaic system that provides about half of your electrical usage. And that seems critical because I've heard lots of warnings during the summer about, you know, potential power outages. Mm-hmm. So why do heat waves cause power outages?
Well, first, our solar system is a grid-tie system. And what that means is that we're connected to PG&E's grid. Unfortunately, that means if the PG&E power grid goes down, there's an automatic shutoff for safety reasons so that the electricity generated by our solar panels is not fed into the grid. I mean, if you were a repairman for PG&E, you wouldn't want our electricity still running in the grid when you think it's shut off, you know, that sort of thing. Now, heat waves can lead to power outages by causing the demand for electricity to exceed the supply. Air conditioning units generally need a lot of electrical power to cool our living and working spaces. The hotter the air outside, the more energy the AC unit consumes to cool indoor spaces to levels that we find, temperatures that we find comfortable. Now, the state independent system operator exists in an attempt to try and match the supply to the demand. But sometimes that's not possible. There's not enough supply, or the transmission lines cannot transport enough electricity to meet the demand. You can't keep increasing the amount of electricity, it starts to heat up like the inside of a toaster. And so that can lead to failure of the lines and so forth. So to protect the grid, what they'll do is they'll start to have power shutoffs.
And you lived in Australia for a year where bushfires are common and can be devastating. And wildfires in our own state of California have been growing more severe and dangerous as of late. So is there any link between heat waves and all the wildfires that we've been seeing a lot of in California in the past few years?
Short answer is yes, there is a link. High temperatures are often accompanied by low relative humidity. Both the heat and the low humidity accelerate the drying of vegetation. And again, the heat can dry the soil, also increasing stress on plants. So these three factors increase the fuel for fires by causing the vegetation to burn much more easily.
Yeah, and you also wrote the chapter on extreme weather in the popular science book, Encyclopedia of Weather and Climate Change. So your research looks at weather forecasting and numerical prediction. So how do I know when to expect a heat wave?
Well, let me back up and say that I've been forecasting of heat waves over California has improved a lot in the past 40 years or so. So the forecasts that are produced by the National Weather Service are much better than they used to be. I used to joke in the class that during the summer, the weather forecast would be the heat wave is going to end 3 days from now. And the next day would be heat wave is going to end 3 days from now. The day after that, same forecast. And then that would go on for several days. And then suddenly the heat wave would be over and they'd say, yeah, we forecasted that. And the reason why they were having that trouble was there's very subtle changes in the pressure pattern that have a big impact on whether the sea breeze can come in and cool things down. And those models, let's say during the 1980s and 90s and even into the early 2000s, those models were not quite good enough to capture this subtle change in the pressure pattern. It does seem that the best models in the last 10 years or so do a much better job of this.
And in addition to being a professor, climate expert, and farmer, you're also a marathon runner. So what's the hottest place you've run in a marathon, and how were you able to cope with that?
Well, let's see. I managed to avoid high temperatures for most of my marathons. The hottest might have been Modesto in 2015. It was around 80 degrees Fahrenheit when I finished. Maybe my hottest long distance run and hike was when I crossed the Grand Canyon and back in a day. That was about 45 miles, 11,000 feet of elevation down, 11,000 feet of up in the net. And it was a little warm on the bottom. And that's something I did last year. I coped by doing 8 months of training beforehand, by wearing lots of sun protection and drinking lots of water.
Mm-hmm. My last one for you. A lot of people think that climate related issues are big problems that are hard for individual actions to fix. But what are a couple of things that, you know, I or anyone else can do as an individual to make a difference in this problem of rising temperatures?
Yeah, first off, I'd like to say that I'm sympathetic to that view. I do occasionally myself become discouraged about how much one person can do. But here are ideas in maybe two different sort of categories. First, maybe think about what is sometimes called your carbon footprint and the activities and choices that you make. You know, is there a choice for something that produces less greenhouse gas? And this might be walking or biking instead of riding in a car. It might be in some dietary choices that have less impact on the environment. If you're heating and air conditioning, are produced by electricity or gas that's not from renewable sources, then tolerating a wider range of temperature in your home is maybe one way. The other category might be to support policies and people who are working to reduce greenhouse gases from entering the atmosphere. This might be voting for candidates who commit to reducing greenhouse gases. It might mean public expression, such as joining or organizing a march for reducing carbon emissions and or by supporting green energy production.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Groat John, for joining me on Time Out Radio today.
Yeah, thanks, Rohan. It was a pleasure.
All right. That's Dr. Richard Groat John from UC Davis, who is a professor of climate dynamics.
Trouble, blood is in the rocky waters. Hide away your sons and daughters, eat you alive. Levels, better put your head on swivels. Dancing with the very devil, butter tonight. You think you're better than them, better than them. You think they're really your friends, really your friends. But when it comes to the end, you're just the same as them, same as them. So let it go.
troubles. Drowning, you see in doubles. Don't you let them see your struggles. Hiding your tears. Crisis, take advantage of your niceness. Cut you up in even slices. Prey on your fear. You think you're better than them. Recipe. I wonder if my day is coming. Blame it on the entropy. My blood is pumping. I can see the end is right in front of me. Don't take it from me. I could be everything. Everything.
That was Sharks by Imagine Dragons. In today's travel segment, we visit Death Valley, which is located in the Mojave Desert in the states of California and Nevada. The Timbisha Shoshone Native American people lived in the area for centuries. Hottest, driest, lowest, largest, all of those adjectives apply to Death Valley, a land of extremes. At 3.4 million acres, it's the largest national park in the lower 48 states of the U.S. It certainly lives up to its name and is one of the hottest places in the world. The highest recorded temperature in the world, 134 degrees Fahrenheit, was recorded in Death Valley's Furnace Creek on July 10, 1913. Death Valley is also the driest place in North America. In 1929, not a single drop of rain fell there. Badwater Basin in Death Valley National Park is the lowest point in North America and is 282 feet below sea level. You may be surprised to find out that Death Valley is only 76 miles from the highest point in the lower 48 states, Mount Whitney, which is 14,505 feet high. So the lowest and highest points in the U.S. are less than 100 miles apart. About 1,000 miles of roads give visitors access to the surreal beauty of the area. Watch out for the roadrunner. This long-legged bird, about 2 feet tall, is one of the most common wildlife species spotted there. Despite its name, Death Valley actually has a lot of life. It has more than 1,000 species of plants, 300 species of birds, 50 species of mammals, and 36 species of reptiles. It even has 6 species of fish. These species of fish manage to survive in the salty waters and harsh conditions of Death Valley. One of the world's rarest fish, the Devil's Hole pupfish, can live only in the hot waters of Devil's Hole, where water temperatures and oxygen concentrations kill most other fish. Spring in Death Valley brings stunning and colorful displays of wildflowers that attract thousands of visitors each year. Two strange phenomena in Death Valley are rocks that move on their own and sand that sings. At the bottom of the dry lake bed of Racetrack Playa are hundreds of rocks, some that weigh up to 700 pounds, that have traveled over 1,500 feet, leaving trails on the grounds. How does this happen? When the lake bed floods and water freezes on cold winter nights, the ground has a thin layer of ice. The ice breaks into large floating panels during the day. Wind pushes the rocks across the slick surface, and this leaves trails behind the path of these rocks in the mud. At the top of the sand dunes in Death Valley, you can hear singing sand. When the sand slides down the steep faces of high dunes, it produces a sound that's a lot like the bass note of a pipe organ. This probably happens because of the friction between sand grains. So that wraps up our journey to our place of the week, Death Valley. Alright, let's call a timeout for Time Out Radio. This was your host, Rohan Bakshi. You're listening to KDRT 95.7 FM, where the grassroots grow. Have a great day, everyone.